You're listening to the Electronic Media Collective Podcast Network. Yeah, it's a mouthful. For more great shows like the one you're about to enjoy, visit electronicmediacollective.com. And now, our feature presentation.
Hi-de-ho, buckaroos, and welcome to Comics with My Kids Podcast, the official podcast for the comicscornerbox.blogspot.com. I am your host, Matt D., and tonight, I'm actually solo tonight, because the kids have gone out to do fun stuff outside. So I chose to take this time to recognize a Chicago's very own Robots with Coffees, Paul Zarnowski. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did.
All right. Not only is he the creator of Robots with Coffee, and you can check out his stuff at robotswithcoffee.com, but he's also a band member for Hired Goons. No, they're not people that go to your house and trash the place up. Although, if you do invite them for bands, maybe. So, but thank you, Paul, for taking this time to sit with me.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead and discuss a little bit and dive right into Robots with Coffee. Now you've taken two really cool ideas. You've taken what I love best in the world, which is coffee, and my second favorite thing, which is robots. So can you please let our audience know a little bit about Robots with Coffee?
Robots with Coffee is the banner name of comic strips and art by myself under the name, working as the name Mort Inkingbot. Mort Inkingbot is a very crabby cartoonist who came to Earth from what we like to call that other planet full of robots. and he has been a syndicated cartoonist in a dwindling newspaper market, doing these sort of laugh-a-day comic strips where you, the reader, have a laugh and then you get back to work. Mort's catchphrase is "get back to work." And the name itself comes from, I would just take pictures of my Transformers collection with coffee. And it became just be kind of a thing. And I had a couple of friends help me out, and they would take pictures of their toys with coffee, and it kind of, you know, sort of spread with like some other Transformers fans. And I sort of started doing like fan art for Transformers, you know. Okay. And I started doing like comic strips about Transformers, and then I came up with Mort as the name of the artist, and it kind of hit me right then and there that I should just make comic strips about robots in general, not based on anything. And Mort would be this guy. That's kind of the subtext of, you know, behind the scenes. And that's where that came from. And so I just do these comic strips about robots who take things literally. I went a long way to tell you that. That's what the comic strips are about. Generally, there's two panel strips about robots who take, you know, puns literally, or they themselves exist as a pun, you know. There's a police officer who's told he has to work with Loose Cannontron. Like, oh no, he's a loose cannon. And the next panel is, he's a cannon. He's the embodiment of a cannon. He's a literal cannon. But his wheel has fallen off because it's a loose cannon. And, you know, that's the gag. And that's what the strips are like. And it's very groan-inducing, but that's what I go for. And often because they're robots and that's just kind of the world they live in, they take everything literally. There's dramatic repercussions, you know. There's a character called Johnsontron who works at an office called Paper Pushing, and he's got a boss bot, he's got a coworker bot, and you know he dies nearly every appearance. He's like Kenny from South Park, you know. And that's what the strips are about.
Right. Now, the first time I saw you, you were at the Northwest Indiana Comic Con, and you had copies available of Robots with Coffee. I picked up issues 1 and 2, and I couldn't put them down until I finished reading them because they're so funny. I mean, I'm a dad and I love dad jokes, and this series is just chock full of dad jokes.
Yeah.
In particular, I like some of the work jokes because I can definitely see work situations. I really like the one in which, the one robot had asked his coworker, "Hey, you know, how are things going with your girlfriend?" And well, I can't get her out of my mind. It turns out that they literally shrunk the robot and stuck it in his head.
Yeah, that, you know, and the thing is you hear these phrases and you think, well, how would that be literal? And with robots, it makes it a lot easier.
Yes.
You know, and, yeah. And the trick to being the artist behind this is that I don't have to pay attention to anatomy. You know, exactly. And so yeah. I especially being a Transformers fan and just when you look at like the toys and you look at their existence in cartoons or how they're modeled or whatever, they obviously don't look like the toys after a while because you have to simplify. But you take a, you know, if this known toy company and known they're the people who handle their properties can take these liberties, what I can do whatever I want to. You know,
exactly.
I used to draw, you know, and I used to have a comic strip about people and being, this is terrible as an artist to admit, but being, having to be, consistent in your characters from panel to panel is hard. You know? And real artists will tell you, it's like, you like to draw a tree, prepare to draw that tree from every angle. And it's, and I clearly can't do that, but I like drawing. You know, so this allows me to do that, and I've had so much fun doing it since then.
Gotcha. Yeah, I one thing I liked about your art is that you have a very simplistic frame. You pretty much are paneling. You've got your characters all set up. You have very minimal background, but yet you still manage to be efficient with your line work, so you know that, okay, I'm in an office setting, you know?
Right.
And I particularly liked in, I can't remember if it was issue one or two, but you had a human sitting there having to draw for more inking bot, and if I remember right, I think that's somebody that we know.
That was me. Yeah, so early strips it was me feeling out the idea of the strip, and I don't know if your copy says second print on it.
Yes, it does.
So I put a disclaimer in there because people are like, "Oh, is that for kids?" And I never thought about it. Because they're dad jokes, but with like deadly consequences, you know, they're just dumb robots. Right. What do dads like to do, but like just do things literally when your kids are, you know, asking for things. And it's like the third time they've asked or 10th time they've asked. And it's like, I don't know, you know, maybe. And then you do it literally like, no, that's not what I meant, dad. But I realized that like there were strips in there that I took from my personal life. That was like, oh, maybe, you know, if when I see someone like buying the comic and handing it to their 5-year-old, it's not like there's any risque items in there, but have to explain what a job interview is to a kid, you know,
yeah.
Or what a dating site is to a kid, you know, and it's like, oh, maybe, you know, I shouldn't be paranoid about stuff like that, but it might not be obvious. And so, yeah, but I'm in there and because I used to draw myself. And I used to do personal strips about myself. And it's not that they weren't going anywhere, but that's just after a while, it was like when I started doing this, that's how I wanted to make these comics, you know?
Right.
And again, just sort of, it was a little more liberating. I had done strips about sports, about baseball. My first paid comic strip right off the bat was I did a strip for the Heckler, which was, like the Onion for Cubs fans, we used to call it.
Okay.
And I just sent them a sample and they called me right away and I was doing the strips and the editor would say things like, your art is terrible. Where's my next strip? and you stick with that. You keep going. But that was, again, having to stay on model and having to keep things consistent. And, you know, it wasn't like I was drawing people, but you're drawing stadiums. We talk about doing like simple line work. I mean, I try to do complicated stuff once in a while to establish scenes and what have you. But like, if you can just draw a couple lines, there's a door frame, there's a wall, there's a copier machine, there's the hang in there cat, there's a desk, you know, any of those factors says that's an office.
Exactly.
Boom, done. Move on, you know, and people, if you can establish something somewhere, you don't have to do, I don't mean to like be a proponent for lazy artwork. But people are intuitive. If you do it right, they'll get it. And that's important. And some of the best comics are that way. And especially comic strips. I grew up on comic strips. So, you know, there's like Garfield. He sits on a ledge. He sits at a countertop.
Yeah.
For three panels. And the only thing that you'll notice about Garfield is that the line in the background shifts vertically. you know, it's a diagonal and then it's horizontal and then it's the other way diagonal, you know, in like almost every panel. And that always, as a kid, it was interesting to me. And so, you know, I actually made fun of that in one of my strips. But it's just a sort of like artistic cheats that you can do. If that helps answer that question, whatever the question was.
Yeah.
Why, it was me drawing myself in there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like later, and later.
And then he just dived right into efficiency.
You're right. You know, but, you know, just, I'm going to be throwing whatever cartooning tips I can. If you, once you've seen my comics, and you think, wow, he does this. So can I? And yes. Right.
Yeah.
But well, yeah,
you mentioned that. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I phased myself out pretty much. And later strips are mostly just straight gags. So.
Yeah, it is neat. Like the first, like I said, I think the first book, I noticed a lot of, there's several jokes in there that included you. And to go back to the whole robots with coffee, I do believe that it is kid friendly. It's family friendly.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, there is some context that is contextual with like adult relationships, but not like anything that you wouldn't see in a normal everyday situation on TV.
Right.
Don't want to go down that road, but
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's nothing in there that I don't think a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old couldn't understand.
And I was reading comic strips as a kid, you know, from the get-go. When, like, I don't even know when I was reading comic strips, but like you're reading Doonesbury, you don't know what's going on, but I'm reading it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
I grew up reading a lot of Calvin and Hobbes, and there was a lot of like subtext in Calvin and Hobbes that I didn't pick up as a kid, but as I read it later on in life, I was like, oh wow, that was really funny.
I mean, they're called Calvin and Hobbes.
So yeah, I think that for anyone that's listening, pick up a copy of comics with pick up a copy of comics with my kids. Pick up a copy of Robots with Comics. There I go again. Robots with Coffee.
It's hard to explain to people. People are like, what's that title about? And it's like, that's just the name I came up with, and I just kept it.
It's, you know, it's catchy.
Yeah, it's different, and you know, it was because I just drink a lot of coffee, and I have a lot of and it just kind of, it's the name stuck, and the response just from taking photos of toys with coffee was like huge. Like other stuff I had done hadn't done, like. Sort of like gotten that response, like people I haven't heard from were calling me. I'm like, I love those photos, and it's like it's just a toy with coffee, you know. But I'll take it, and it, you know, and I run with it. So that's where that, you know, again, that's where kind of where that comes from, and it also keeps things kind of open. But they're not going to be drinking coffee all the time, but they're, you know, it's just the name, and it's a fun name, I think.
Yeah, it's fun. I think it's rather clever. Mm-hmm. So here's where I'm going to hit you with a big hard question.
All right.
Transformers or GoBots, which were better?
Transformers were better. GoBots were first. That was the argument you had as a kid in 1984.
Yes.
but Transformers were just kind of off the wall, you know, right off the bat. And there's like I don't know how to describe how like the attitude was different, maybe. Don't know, that psychoanalyze why kids fell for Hasbro and not Tonka,
right?
But or whatever the was it Galoob?
I think it was Galoob. Because I had a few GoBots growing up, and I always I always felt that the GoBots were like the poor man's Transformer, whereas like the Transformer that, you know, I'd take my GoBot to the schoolyard and I'd play with it with all my friends, and they all had Transformers. They had like Starscream and Optimus Prime, and here I was with the motorcycle guy that I can't even remember his name for.
Sidekill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, you got this cool motorcycle, but it's not as cool as Optimus Prime.
Right. But you know what though? Think of the packaging.
Okay.
What's 10 times cooler is the artwork packaging for Transformers. And you held on to it. You had to, because it had the tech specs.
Exactly.
Which was huge. You have this, the bio is already written, and maybe that limits the imagination of the child, but it tells you their backstory right off the bat and what their personality is like. And it's you know, just that grid red or purple design is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And Transformers just sounds more punchy than GoBots. Like, oh, like some very lazy marketer came up with that, but that's not the case, but they just got beat out hard, you know? And that's sort of unfortunate. And then the other thing too, is that, Transformers had Marvel Comics working for them, writing that stuff for them. And not exactly. Just Marvel Comics, the comics themselves, but like those guys went and they came up with all that stuff for both G.I. Joe and Transformers. They were hired to be the ones who created those names. And so, and you know, these are people who are just already pro. And I have no idea about GoBots, but we know that because Transformers survived and bought GoBots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, I'm going to segue right into, I really don't have much of a segue, but, right into your band, mm-hmm. Hired Goons. So how'd you guys form, you know, what's the backstory to Hired Goons?
So Hired Goons is that we, Simpsons. I would call it a Ramones influenced Simpsons tribute. And, comes from staying up until like 4 a.m. watching The Simpsons with my roommate, who's my singer. And, we should have a band where we sing about The Simpsons. And then I was watching the documentary about the Ramones, whose title escapes me right now. And it hit me, like, where was the first place I saw the Ramones was on The Simpsons. and immediately just stuff started filtering into my brain. And I had told my roommate the next day, and he's an amazing lyricist. We came up with ideas, but it wasn't like 2 more years until we found a drummer. We wanted to make sure we got a drummer, because when you're a band, and I've been in so many bands, and just finding a drummer and sort of like, the thing about doing comics is great, because at least for me is that I'm doing it myself. If I'm in a mm-hmm. band with other people, and you have to depend on them. I'm in theater, you have to depend on 12 other people. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So it gets, personalities can clash and make things really difficult. So we really wanted to find someone who, you know, we can gel with and be on the same page from us from the get go. And we found this drummer, Devana, who we would call Kodos. I was Homer. Our singer was Monty. Our first guitar player was Otto. And we cranked out some tunes, and we did some shows right off the bat as a Ramones cover band. And kind of use it as a template to write songs and go from there. And so we recorded 2 albums, but, you know, life gets in the way for some people, and people have to move for jobs or family or things like that. And then it kind of slows momentum down a little bit. And a couple of years ago, we kept talking about like all the stuff that we had on file. And we had like a 3rd album that we thought, like, do we have enough material? And we did the bean counting of what was in our emails and files, and there were 20 songs. Well, that's enough. Mm-hmm. And six of those songs we came up with an EP, and we really hammered it down. Just to give you an idea how long like a band stuff can take, is I did my bass parts a year ago for the EP, which we called the EP of Horror. And that's about the Treehouse of Horror episodes. And we released that in October. And just to kind of back and forth to kind of do, you know, make sure things sound right and guitars sound right. And you go in, you do some, you know, backing vocals, and people get busy. It took, you know, a lot of twisting of arms to get back into the studio and finish that. And now we have like 14 more songs, or how many other songs left. But one of those was a song that I would do acoustically with our singer at open mics, just me and him, called Spider-Man 14. The idea being that they're killing off all the heroes and all the villains in the Spider-Man Sam Raimi movies.
Right.
And who's left? and we were also big fans of Spider-Man and the Spider-Man comics. We were kind of well-versed, when you get past some of the bigger characters, there's really not a very deep well of awesome villains, you know. And my favorite is the Spot, who is going to be in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
Mind is blown over this, that they put the Spot in one of the movies. But yeah, so that was that song was about. And it's like, well, let's do that. And then let's get, you know, we as a joke between our first two albums, we did like a one microphone demo and we put studio albums on there as like a sampler. Like, here's a sampler plus some goofy songs. We did this a certain theme to a certain cartoon and we sing about Iron Man and then we sing about Wolverine. And then we changed one of the lyrics to one of our songs to be about the Thomas Jane Punisher movie. Because that movie has, like, for us, one of those like late night just laugh-a-thons. Like, it's so not a Marvel movie, but it's, you know, before Iron Man, it's just one of those. That came out before Iron, yes.
Yeah.
It was a very funny movie to us, and we have a lot of laughs. And so it's like, well, let's do this. Let's dust this off. Let's do those versions, and then let's also do these different theme songs of, like, let's do Iron Man and Wolverine again. And I said, we got to do Darkhawk, because Darkhawk was my character in the 90s.
Oh, really?
Yes. And but who won't get a movie anytime soon?
No. It's funny because, you know, I was a big Marvel head growing up. And so mm-hmm. seeing you're hearing your song about Darkhawk, I'm like, that's like a D-list character. I mean, he's like, wait, he's like down. He's like past Night Thrasher and the New Warriors. That's how far down he was. I'm like, you did a song about Darkhawk?
So that's a little tease. And I sent you, I think it's a rough mix, but we have, it's going to be on Bandcamp and on Spotify pretty soon. That and all the other. Like the Spider-Man 14 is the solo song basically, and it, you know, it's a single with 10 B sides. You get like 10 extra because you're going to hear we basically run that joke into the ground, and Darkhawk is what caps it off, frankly. Like, because now we're singing about Darkhawk. But yeah, you're right. New Warriors. He was in New Warriors. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
Yeah. Gosh, 90s Marvel, and that was like probably around the time when the exodus began for Image Comics.
Oh yes, yeah.
You know,
everything at Marvel was suddenly getting extreme. You know, they were mm-hmm. going with the bigger, like X-Factor completely changed their costumes to get more right. of a 90s feel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had to follow the lead of X-Force, you know, which was one of the top-selling comics, and then like all the X-Men covers, Jim Lee, X-Men, and you know, Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, and then the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man, which became the Eric Larson Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I was trying to read Spider-Man at the time, Amazing Spider-Man. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know. I wasn't really a comics person. I was into weekly comics, and I only went into the comic store because of, they canceled Bloom County in the Tribune.
Okay.
And I had to like, I found a magazine that reprinted those comics in a comic book store as they gotcha. Were coming out. So I was like, oh, thank goodness I can get, you know, the Bloom County again. Cause that was like, that's like my ultimate comic strip. I love it. You know, I was totally livid when they took it out of the Tribune Sunday papers, and that's how I found comics. That's how I bought, like, you know, I bought an issue of Spawn for some reason. And then, I bought the most expensive comic ever made, the Angela issue.
Oh, okay.
Because there's the lawsuit that basically would end up in, and then Spawn 10, which had Cerebus on the cover.
Okay.
And then I got in this, you know, Amazing Spider-Man, just because that's Spider-Man. I should read Spider-Man if I'm going to read comics. And I didn't know that, like, it's almost impossible to backtrack because back issues are so expensive. Okay. And then, like, I'll pick something that's just started. I'll pick Darkhawk and see what that's like. And you know, for my sins, I got to read it. And what was your favorite comic back in the day?
Oh, man. I was a big Wolverine fan. Yeah. Wolverine and G.I. Joe, and they were both written mm-hmm. by Larry Hama.
Right.
I really liked them. And then I got sucked into the Image 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my big thing was I bought issue one of Spawn. Mm-hmm. And you know, everybody I knew bought issue one of Spawn.
Right.
And then I stuck with it. In fact, I just read like issue 322 the other day, or 332. I can't remember what exactly they're on, but I've got a full run from one all the way to like last month's issues.
That's incredible.
I just couldn't stop. It was
right.
It was like I was addicted to comics, and I became a collector. And now here I am on comics with my kids. I'm introducing mm-hmm. comic books to my kids, and suddenly mm-hmm. they start getting that bug that they can't stop, you know, can't stop reading it. And
right.
Next thing you know, we've got a huge, you know, kids comic collection. So
I didn't know much about like comics or publishing or, you know, how that, you know, why those guys left, but I had heard enough when that stuff was coming out, like sort of how empty those comics were,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's a lot of that sort of like, you know, probably from Marvel and DC fans who, how dare you leave Marvel or DC. But when Bone went to Image, do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Bone's such a fun comic.
And I was like, I'm not going to read Bone anymore because it went to Image. and I didn't. And not, you know, I mean, I didn't know that Image was, I think, you know, you don't know what the market forces are at the time with like Marvel becoming their own distributor and everyone having to flee to Diamond because DC became Diamond only.
Right.
And so everyone else was like, well, we're going to leave all the distributors. And if you're a small press book and instead of like having a bunch of distributors, now you only have one distributor, you probably have money tied up in those other distributors that you're never going to see again. And it absolutely, if you remember the market crash of like 94 to 97, you know, yeah. Marvel Comics was like one court order away from ceasing to exist.
Yeah. In fact, if I remember right, DC was going to try to buy them in the 90s. Oh, and
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then Perlmutter ended up buying them.
Right.
And that's where.
And it's so, that's like, see, I don't know about you, like when I get to a certain age, it's like, you know, what's more interesting than comics is the forces behind comics.
Exactly. It's like the, like you said, the forces behind comics, the distribution of comic books. I got to the point where as much as I love the comic books, I love reading them. I also like process. Like mm-hmm. I talk in our podcast every once in a while about, you know, the line work and how much I enjoy it. And
mm-hmm.
I love talking to creators about their process. And as we had mentioned earlier about your efficient line and how you make, you know, you establish everything. That's the stuff that I love. That's my bread and butter. That's what I love talking about. So.
Yeah. I'm disappointing you because I'm so lazy as an artist. Well, I love, I don't know if you know who Pete Bagg is.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Okay. And he actually had done some all ages books, but you know, he the Buddy Bradley stuff, which, you know, not for kids or whatever, but he's one of those, he used to work with Robert Crumb. He used to edit Robert Crumb's magazine in mm-hmm. the 80s or whatever. But you talk about like just figures, they're cartoonish, and sometimes the cross-hatching is insane, and sometimes everything is super simple. Evan Dorkin is one of those guys.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Milk and Cheese. You know,
Milk and Cheese. That's the thing is like, I got into comics because of stuff like that, because of collections for Milk and Cheese. They were distributed in, they appeared in the Onion, the version of the Onion that appeared on college campuses that wasn't like the national distributed, version that came out in like 2000.
Okay.
And because my sister went to Champaign, Urbana, and she would send me the Onion, and it had Milk and Cheese in there. And the guy who later on took on the Onion as I'm going into wild directions here, but he did a book called, he did a strip. He became the editor in chief, Scott Dickers. And he did two strips in there. One was called Plebes. The other one was called Jim's Journal.
Okay.
And Jim's Journal is probably the better known of the two. It was just very simple. It wasn't even like, there weren't jokes. It was just like four panels. Like, I had a good day today. It was just the same guy almost every panel and doing almost nothing. And you have to really appreciate stuff like that. But you know, we're talking about comics distro, what have you, like a lot of great comics disappeared like that because of those decisions of having to jump ship. And I think Bone probably was like, oh, we need a Jeff Smith and cartoon press had to probably like find someone to carry them for a certain amount of time while market cool down. So that's a, you know, that was a little ramble both into what interests me about the biz, plus, you know, like I just thought I would throw out a couple of my influences out there.
not a problem. Yeah. Which actually I was going to ask you, you know, since you're a big comic, weekly comic, Sunday strip kind of guy, mm-hmm. what were some of the comics you used to read that you enjoyed? You mentioned Bloom County.
Bloom County was, you would read the daily paper, the daily strips. Bloom County. Doonesbury was interesting because sometimes you would see those, like the White House. Mm-hmm. Four panels of the White House. You think, how lazy is that? I recently ran into somebody who had basically been doing political cartoons and spot illustrations for like 40 years. And he says, I have seen mock-ups and original art of Doonesbury, and he draws each panel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, I was one of those, like, really? Because I wouldn't do that. You know, I would have never have guessed. There's, you know, and then finding sort of like the alt weeklies and seeing the sort of more out there kind of comics, mm-hmm. and just kind of falling in love with like black and white comics, you know what I mean? And just, right. it's limiting. Sometimes you see people and they go all out with the detail, and sometimes it's very simple. I really dug stuff like that. But it was my gateway. I loved comic strips, and Bloom County became an obsession. That's the one I really liked, and you know, it seemed more about something, and the animals were. It's easier to project yourself on an animal than it is on a person, I think.
Yeah,
because an animal is. That's why I do robots. It's, you know, because these non-human things, it's easier to project onto that. But it sort of geared me towards looking at the black and white comics and like looking for stuff through that and like finding stuff where people that just disappeared after two issues or it ended up being someone's springboard into a full-time comics career. And that was always interesting to me. The Tick. Remember The Tick?
Yes. Yeah.
Before it was a cartoon, it was a comic. And that was something I was looking through. And we're talking about simple line work. And efficient art. Look at Ben Edlund's The Tick. It's pretty fantastic. It's going back, and now that I make comic strips, going back and looking at seeing how people do stuff, you know, and seeing more about that. I mean, you talk about Bone. Like, that guy's such a great artist, but some of it, like, Bone itself is just, you know, it's not a white blob. It's a line that goes around. It's just circles. He's just literally circles.
Exactly, you know,
and it's incredible. And he's such a great artist, but what sticks out are the three simple characters.
Yeah. And even the human figures, I mean, they had some detail to them, but they still had some simplicity to them. Like,
yeah,
to delineate the nose, there was just like two little dots, and
right.
You kind of had a little bit of a chin, and then there you go.
But you have to be an artist to know how to do stuff like that. You know, you look like the Archie characters. I mean, you know, maybe it's too simplistic. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know how complicated Archie's going to be. Although they do stuff like Archie versus the Predator. They've gone all out with some of these stories. And it's like, okay, that's pretty funny, Archie. But you have to know how to draw, you know, before you can simplify too.
Yeah.
It really does help. And I do practice, you know, I come up with like three or four robots. I pencil every strip first before I draw them. Okay. I mean that is drawing, but before it gets inked. So there's passes. I have to do a lot of digital editing, you know, because I do make mistakes, but I don't like using whiteout. I use blue pencil line.
Okay.
I don't like erasing paper because it ends up tearing up the paper.
Right. Yeah.
And it actually ends up like I can buy the nicest eraser in the world, but I'm just the clumsiest person, and I'll just end up ruining the ink lines. So it's just easier to just scan it and, you know, find the blue if it survived the scan and remove it digitally. I can do it like that, and it's great. But I was just I got a deal on a Wacom tablet. And that's it's a steep learning curve. You still have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, but it's I've done a couple strips like that, and no one could tell the difference, I guess. I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta say, I really enjoy your Robots with Coffee website, and I follow you on Twitter
at
Robots with Coffee. So, listener, if you want to see some really cool
Instagram, that's Robots with Coffee.
Okay.
Because Twitter is kind of a garbage show these days.
Yeah, it is.
It's Robots W Coffee, and then Facebook is also Robots with Coffee. And if you go to the Facebook page, I have a partner who does he does photo comics.
Okay.
Of his toys and word balloons, and he sometimes has a running story on there, but for his day job, he's not allowed to have something that's like might seem as like getting a profit somewhere. Okay. So I can't reprint them anywhere.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, it's really weird. He has to like have a annual review and things like that. If you ever work in the government or in the state, you probably know what it's like to like you can't accept gifts or something like that.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, that's what's on our Facebook page.
So, but yeah, listener, I recommend if you want a good laugh, you want to see some daily cartoon strips, check out Robots with Coffee. Man, I'm gonna butcher that nonstop. I'm gonna like go in and find all my comics references.
Well, comics are important, and this is a comics podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah, dear kids. You know, I think you had an episode where the kids were talking. Did you let them read Death in the Family?
Yeah. I did let them read Death in the Family. And we also read The Death of Superman. It was a 2-for-1 day.
Oh, okay.
So
do you like what was their like, were they shocked or?
Well, Logan really wasn't so much shocked. I think he's starting to kind of develop that, you know, playing video game,
right,
you know, desensitization kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when he saw the panel where you could call in, he was like, well, what's this? And then right. I had explained to him what, you know, phones were like before cell phones, how we had to call these 900 numbers and, you know, you had to vote to see, and it was a really cool idea. And so I think that was more of what I had to explain than necessarily, you know, Robin dying.
Right. You know, and it's interesting because it's like you don't know what goes into some of these stories sometimes, that there's this, you know, that there's like this, I won't say desperation in publishing, but sometimes it's like nothing's sticking. We're getting beat by our competitor. You know, how do we get our name in the news? You know, right. and like Death of Superman, I don't mean to be cynical, but that was when it was like, you know, I remember people lining up and buying the bags and boards, the bagged version.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's going to be a Superman 76 next month.
But 75 is his death.
Yeah.
And it comes with a cool band. I get this armband I can wear. And I wore it for 3 seconds in school and then I took it off. So they didn't want to get beat up.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Well, I don't have anything else. Is there anything that you want to plug for your website or your band?
Robotsb.com is where the refined, cleaned up art ends up. Okay. And I also review movies that came out like 40, no, like longer than that, like 70, 80 years ago. out there, like for some reason, I watch a lot of film noir. I end up like writing about it on there. And then, you know, the social media, Hired Goons is gabagabado.com. It's also got a Facebook page. You can look for Hired Goons Band on Facebook and you'll find us. We're on Spotify. We got 2 albums. We have the EP. We have an album coming out. You know, keep my fingers crossed, hopefully in October. It got to, you know, otherwise I'm going to be plugging away in my little cave. and just drawing some more. And, you know, I'm working on another coloring book. We didn't mention, If you don't mind, I have a color book, which is, you talk about like Hasbro and marketing. It's my version of Hasbro. If Hasbro were really desperate, the toys were really bad. And it's just a bunch of characters and their backs, you know, the bios that the Transformer like bios, but the fourth wall breaks. And it's like, we just can't do this. You know, we're going to get sued. You know what I mean? And that's the tone of the book. And that's what I have at shows. I'm doing another one. I'm working on that, unfortunately, a little too slowly. But hopefully for the next C2E2 or next big show, I'll have that with me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, folks, thanks for listening to this interview with Paul Zarnowski. Please go check out his fun and cool comic strip, Robots with Coffee, at robotswithcoffee.com, plus the other Hired Goons and comicscornerbox.blogspot.com, where you can get all of these show notes, where you can get find out where you can find Paul. And if you've liked this episode, give us a rating and review over at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Podchaser. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page, Comics with My Kids / The Comics Corner Box, as well as follow us on Twitter, which, like we said, is, like Paul said, it is a crapshoot out there with Twitter. We're at Comics with Kids. Thanks again, Paul, for taking some time to chat with me.
And I want to say how great it is that you have your kids reading these comics. Encourage everyone to read. You know, there's always something that's interesting, that's just more to the life than television.
Exactly, yes.
Unless you work for television and you want to license my comic. Yeah, I actually had someone from who used to work at Hasbro, who pointed at one of my books and said, that could be a TV show. And I'm like, stop, don't go anywhere, come back here. He's like, well, you have to get a lawyer. And I'm like, I know two people who have had options for shows. I'm sure I can call them. So, you know, but nothing ever came of that. I always thought that was very, very funny, you know.
Gotcha. Alrighty. Well, good night, folks, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Yeah, I forgot. I get a lot of listeners from Disney that listen to this. So maybe, hopefully, I think.
If I can get a cease and desist from Disney, that'd be great.
excuse me, but your podcast sounds a little too much like Steamboat Willie.